Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
You're going to teabag fight instead.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Welcome, everybody. It's The Session. We are back on a Monday at 5 o'clock, which I'm very excited about, to be honest with you. There's something to be said for sort of getting back into the swing of things, even though the method in which we are getting back to things is very different because we're still all socially distant. The studio is closed down, but that's not going to stop the beer information because tonight on the show we have Jamil Zainashef from a little brewery called Heretic Brewing Company. Maybe you've heard of it, probably not. It's one of those fly-by-night operations that nobody really, you know, works too hard at. Isn't that right, Jamil?
Oh, absolutely, brother.
Yeah.
We're about as fly-by-night as it gets.
Yeah.
Small.
That's right.
Tiny. We're you know, a pittance.
That's right. You sell one beer over the bar, and that's to yourself.
Well, yeah. I take the dropper, the eyedropper, and sometimes I'll split that up with two or three of my friends.
You just go to town. You know. That's cool, man. No, I appreciate that.
Well, it makes it easy because you can buy all your stuff at the homebrew store still. And
yes,
that's true.
Or grow my own.
Yeah,
I've got one of those little pots from the Home Depot.
You got a topsy turvy,
and I put that on my patio.
Yep,
and I grow my malt and my hops in the same one.
Yeah, and that's singular malt. You grow your one malt.
Yes,
one thing. Yeah. Put it in there.
And
that's
my hop.
Cool. That's cool, man. Well, I don't want to get too far into it. I don't want to, you know, give any secrets now.
The details.
Yeah. No, but we're going to be talking to you, Jamil, about your canned cocktails. Okay. Is this the first you're hearing of this?
Yeah. this comes as a total shock to me.
Yeah. Not that we're going to talk about canned cocktails, but that you have them. You have no idea. You're up in your office. Sequestered away. Everyone else just sort of like runs the pumps.
In the palace here,
yeah.
I once in a while will look down upon the workers and see what they're doing. But, you know, I can't be bothered with that most of the time.
Well, no. You have to shave your face constantly.
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
It's a daily occurrence.
Well, you know, we've talked a few times, you know, about your trials and tribulations of, you know, opening a distillery and doing all that kind of stuff. And I was fascinated that you have canned cocktails now. And
yes.
I had some unrelated to the show, and I got to say, they were drinkable. So I wanted to get you. You can use my reference or whatever, any marketing material if you want.
Jason Petros says they're drinkable.
drinkable. But I wanted to talk to you about it because it is sort of, you know, it's simultaneously, I think, the sort of new wave for craft beer. It's like a new way into the market, but it's also very unique in the fact that not a lot of people are doing it. So I want to chat with you a little bit about that and a little bit about what's going on at the brewery, because I know that you've been updating people or talking a little bit about your operations when you do Brew Strong with our close personal friend, Mr. John Palner. But yes. I wanted to inoculate our session listeners with, which is a timely pun, and I didn't mean it, but that's all right, with all that information, what's happening at Heretic. I'm drinking a Heretic lager right now, as a matter of fact, in front of a, or out of a Firestone Walker glass, so... You know,
nice.
What are you going to do? So we're going to do that. We're going to have a good time. I promise you, mainly because Teresa is here again. Hi, Teresa.
I am. How are you? A fixture-ish.
You are the number one responder to my texts and emails and the only one who responds to most of them.
Hey, it's true. I'm definitely the kid in class who's like, when the teacher asks, does anyone know the answer? And I'm like, yeah.
You can't, your hand just goes right up. Yeah.
Well, and I wanted to, you know, I as I told you over text, I wanted to low key shame Jamil a little bit about his canned cocktails. No, I really just, I'm actually very curious because, as you may know, we do seltzers now, so I can't really like be too high and mighty and Ryan Heights Gabote about anything anymore.
Yeah, the problem with seltzers, so, a year ago or a couple of years ago, they asked us, our distributor asked us to do seltzers. And so I embarked upon, okay, how do you make a great seltzer? And, you know, it became expensive ingredients, you know, real fruit instead of, you know, fake fruit flavors and all this stuff. And so the price really became significant because I'm not going to make, you know, something with, you know, a squirt of natural extract because they're, you know, it's just a bunch of chemicals. You know, when a raspberry seltzer is clear, it's got to tell you that there's no raspberry in it. It's chemicals that taste like raspberry. So we did these ones with real fruit. And it became quite expensive. And then I realized, you know, there's so many big players getting into seltzers and the price is being driven down. The margins are going lower and lower. And it's a kind of a bulk. It's, you know, the light beer wars are all over again. And so I was like, you know, I don't want to play in that space. So we still make it because... people like the one we did with real fruit, but it's pricey. And so what I wanted to do was cocktails because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, mocktails out there. Yeah. You know, there's, you know, your wine coolers and then there's cocktails made with malt and, you know, flavorings and they're horrible. But you can actually make a real cocktail and, you know, put in a can and it's very durable. You know, it doesn't oxidize like beer does. And, you know, if you look at our cocktails, they're all, I mean, Moscow Mule's the lowest at 10%. The others are 14, 15% ABV. And if you look at everybody else's cocktails, they tend to be 5 to 6%. Because a lot of times they aren't actual cocktails. They are malt-based alcohol, like a beer with, you know, flavorings added. And so we want to do some with real fruit, like you'd make a cocktail at a bar and put that in a can. So it was tricky, but I think, you know, the flavors are there. They're actually quite nice.
There was that moment in time where beer cocktails tried to become a thing and they just, it didn't really pan out. And I think part of what you were saying is, you know, at its essence, it sort of always had a beer element to it. And when you drink a cocktail, you don't want the beer element to it. You want,
a cocktail.
You want a little bit of punch from the alcohol, but you know, it never really got there. And, you know, right. The other side of that is whenever we've talked about beer and you know, you and I or on the show or whatever, it's anything you do to a beer, it has to be a beer first. But how do mm-hmm. you then translate that over to a beer cocktail? It just it didn't make any sense in the space. And
I think if you're going to do it, you got to do real cocktails. If you can do beer, do real beer.
Right.
If you can do cocktails, do real cocktails. If you can do real wine, you know, don't, you know. I appreciate people experimenting and playing around, but
sure,
you know, for the right reason, because you think you're going to make something that tastes great, so a great experience for the consumer versus just making something because it's cheaper that way, you know. And we see a lot of that. Well, it's cheaper that way, or it's easier that way, and unfortunately, that's a real problem. I think where you know the consumer is getting screwed. So.
Yeah, it's like a race to the bottom. You're not really producing the best thing you can, but the thing you can produce, you know?
Right. Well, today, just to stay alive, I mean, that's kind of it. But, you know, I will also say, you know, if a consumer enjoys a product and they think it's great, then they're not wrong. They right. should enjoy it and screw anybody who tells them, you know, it's like... people poo-poo Cheese Whiz. But, you know, if somebody loves Cheese Whiz, okay. Who are you to tell them not to have Cheese Whiz, right?
Yeah, you're not their doctor. You can't. You can do it. You're not right? their heart.
Put down the Cheese Whiz.
I mean.
But that's the same thing. It's like, oh, you can't drink that beer because, you know, for whatever reason. Or you can't drink seltzer because, you know, seltzer is this or that. It's like, well, you know, just back off. Just let. So a human being consume what a human being wants to consume, you know.
These are big words from the style guideline guy, you know.
No, I mean I believe in the styles because they became styles because you know beers were brewed over and over and over that you know a community loved.
Yeah,
and you know it became a thing, and. You know, it must have become that, you know, a thing because, you know, at least hundreds or maybe thousands of people loved it for, you know, however many years. And so maybe there's something there. So I like, you know, it's like cooking a different recipe, you know, for dinner. It's like, oh, I hear this is good. You know, how many times have you done that? It's like, well, let me, you know, you hear about it, you know, in some movie or from some friend, and then you Google it and you try cooking it.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. And then, you know, sometimes you love it and you found something new. And sometimes, you know, you're like, nah, it didn't work for me.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, I had this experience yesterday. As a matter of fact, I got this big giant Greek cookbook. It was like 600 pages of recipes from like Greece and traditional Greek cooking. And because I'm really trying to feel myself and these lovely pictures. And it even has like, you know, the recipe and then it has the recipe name in Greek. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool. Like, I, you know, I can sort of like vibe out. And, you know, everything I've made is sort of like, oh, this is sort of, I don't want to say bland, but basic. It's not churched up. It's not like weird ingredients or whatever, or like fusion or inspired cooking or whatever. It's just, this is what someone's grandma made for 400 years or whatever. And like, I remember these flavors when my dad would cook. And it's
so
like,
maybe not bland, but solid.
Yeah,
solid
exactly.
Greek food.
And they're baseline. It's like chicken, tomatoes, red wine vinegar, and oregano. And like, you can make 100 dishes with that. But it's the same kind of thing where if you want to riff on that, you should really nail that base first.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with beer styles, I guess.
Absolutely.
But I guess it's also the same way with cocktails, too. I mean, when you started the distillery, did you envision one day getting here, or was this sort of a creation of your circumstance?
Yeah, because I had, you know, when we started, part of it was my good friend Brendan Moylan. He was taking our waste beer and processing it at his distillery into, you know, whatever shine he was doing.
Yeah, rocket fuel for his day.
and he told me, he's like, you know, you ought to get yourself a distillery license. And I said, well, I have another address I can use here to get a distillery license. She's like, hey, you should. So I did. And I, at the same time, I had also become familiar with what's now Cutwater's canned cocktails. And I was like, okay, you know, so that's a thing too. And I just thought, well, you know, you could really, you know, zhush it up
and
put a little more, you know, zing into it and, you know, make a bolder cocktail as well. And then we got the distillery started. It was a lot of work and, you know, making things like whiskey and stuff like that until we actually had products that we could, you know, package and sell. It took years. And then, you know, the RTDs, the ready to drink cocktails, I must have worked on that solid for 2 years. I mean, well, I got everything else going on, but it takes a long time to come up with a recipe that will work well as a canned cocktail. You have to, you know, there's certain things, you know, if it settles out in a big, huge lump and coagulates at the bottom and then you got like snot coming out.
Right.
That isn't going to work. You know, you got to make sure that one, important thing is that the cans are lined to stop, you know, otherwise you get metal flavors, right? Mm. That's why, you know, beer cans are lined. But those linings, they have limitations and you cannot, you know, put too much alcohol. There was a, I saw, you know, online, somebody was saying they're putting hand sanitizer in cans. I was like,
oh yeah, no,
you can't do that.
I read that
80% alcohol will melt that can.
Really?
Yeah, and, it was like spring leaks, right?
Yeah, I was like, ooh, because my folks are saying, hey, we should put our sanitizer in cans. I'm like, no, you can't do that. And I thought, oh, I should tell them, you know, but I didn't want to reach out on social media and like be that guy, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, no. They must know something in there. I don't know. But so, you know, it's the same thing with cocktails. You can't exceed a certain ABV. You can't, you need to be careful about the acidity. They have very, you know, stringent limits. You know, when we made a 9% beer with tangerine in it, Ball wanted to, you know, test that beer. You know, that's pretty mellow compared to some of the other things people do. And they're like, oh, no. We need to send us some to the lab. Either that or they thought it sounded good and they want to have some.
Right.
You know,
so they wanted to test it to see if their cans could contain it.
They did. They did ask for like a gallon.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
oh, me too, man.
A gallon for testing. But
yeah, I work for Ball and we need some, you know, constant.
But, you know, you have to, there's a lot of work that goes into the recipes. And then, you know, dealing with the TTB, you know, they're very strict. You know, they, you know, our lemon drop, it has a little bit of orange juice in it. And, you know, it really rounds out the citrusy without, you know, being sharp and angular. It doesn't taste like orange juice, but it's just a little bit in the background. It's a common thing that a lot of bartenders do, and you know when they're making a lemon drop. And so you know the TTP, they're like, you can't put orange juice in a lemon drop. Call it a lemon drop. Call it something else.
Yeah, I used to work at TJ Fridays. Well, I know this. You can't do that.
Right. I'm like, they're like, you know, prove it to us that you know you can use orange juice lemon drop. Like, okay. And yeah, so I'm like, I'll Google some recipes. So I Googled a bunch of recipes and, you know, there was enough of them that said orange juice in a lemon drop. And I gave them a list of like 20 websites that say orange juice in lemon drop. And they were like, oh, okay, well, that's all right. We'll go ahead and let that go.
So no, two things. Number one, isn't that their job? Is to do the research to make sure that the paperwork matches. You
wouldn't
want
to respond with, let me Google that for you.
I don't know. Maybe you should. But also, so why were they asking? Because you couldn't call it a lemon drop because it's a specific lemon drop thing? Right.
I could make but I would have to call it specialty cocktail with lemon juice, lemon peel, vodka, sugar, orange juice. You know, it becomes this long, convoluted name.
Jeez.
You would think with all the issues in the world today that they wouldn't really get that hung up on a little bit of orange juice.
I know. Right. You'd think.
Is it like a certain percentage or just none at all? Like you couldn't have over 1%?
You couldn't have any. They're like, prove to us you can put orange juice in a lemon drop.
Why not just not tell them?
You know, I think they're put in kind of a no-win situation at the TTP, right?
Okay.
Their job is really to protect the consumer and, also to assist, breweries, distilleries, and wineries with, licensing and, making sure the labels are correct. The FDA doesn't do label approval. The FDA just says, well, here's our rules. Good luck. And then, if you put something out that is afoul of the FDA rules and somebody mentions it, they will yank your product from the shelves and make you pay to clean it all up and fix everything because you didn't follow their rules. With the TTP, at least, they're spending a bunch of time to check the labels for you and ensure that they are correct. And once you've got this cola, you can go out to market very confidently and say, hey, I've got TTP approval, so nobody can, say I'm wrong on my labels and I can't get in trouble for my labels. So that's actually kind of a benefit of TTP. It's very difficult. Back in the day, it was one dude, Battle Martin, who
that's right. Yeah,
he was a great dude. I met him.
That should be a beer label.
We should make a Battle Martin beer label. Yeah. I
think he'd get approved.
He was, if you talk to him about what you're doing instead of fighting with him.
Yeah,
he was extremely helpful, and he really did have a sense of, this is correct, this is not. And then, they had, with the growth of breweries, they had to bring in a lot of other people, and a lot of new people started up. And one person wanted me to prove, because with with beer, you have a bunch of approved ingredients. With cocktails or with any spirits, you pretty much need a formula for anything other than plain vodka, anything that you do anything other than vodka, pretty much you need a formula for.
All right.
But we're doing a lemon vodka, and I'm like, okay, so you take the lemon peels and you soak them in the vodka, and that's how you make lemon vodka. And that formula was rejected because I needed to prove that lemons were safe for human consumption. I don't know how to respond to this.
Yeah. What did you say? Because how do you prove
it? I literally wrote, it's a lemon. The yellow things you see in the grocery store that people use for baking and drinks like lemonade. Lemons.
Yeah.
And that one, once I responded that, that one went through. But they wanted the, and actually, I'm sure they knew what a lemon was. And we're not, dim-witted. They were asking for the GRAS number. The FDA has a list of things that are generally accepted as, food safe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is no GRAS number for lemons because they're lemons. So I actually looked it up. They asked for the GRAS number.
Okay.
And so they're asking, the sake of humor, I'm making them seem a little more dim-witted than they actually were. They're asking for the GRAS number. I'm like, there's no GRAS number. I'm like, it's a lemon that you find in the grocery store.
Like you're just and too so, deep in the grass, guys.
Right, right. But the FDA does not GRAS approve, ordinary things that everybody knows is food.
Right.
They're more focused on, this strange nut from, Brazil or this strange berry from China, is that, accepted as food safe. So they don't worry about like a lemon that you see in the grocery store.
That's
so
crazy.
That's where the rub came in. But once I told them it's a lemon from a grocery store, they pretty much backed off.
Yeah. Well, when you're making these cocktails, how do you, and don't worry, beer people, we're getting into some sort of beer adjacent, conversation here, but how do you address you know, flavors. Are you thinking about the flavors in the... Well, here, let's open one. Let me open one. Which should I start with? We have the Moscow Mule, the Lemon Drop, the Staycation, and the Sip. And I want to talk about how you address the flavors and how you approach it, if it's, you know, from a cocktail standpoint, or do you have to pare it down because it's being packaged, or all this kind of stuff. And hopefully we can sort of translate some of that, you know, flavor
sure.
verbiage. Yeah.
We'll translate my 2 years of work into 10 minutes of great radio.
Well, yeah, I feel like that's really all it's worth. I mean, we're doing you a favor.
There you go.
If anyone can do it, you can, Jamil.
That's right.
Could be 5 minutes.
Yeah.
yeah, whichever one you want to start with. Which was your favorite, JP?
Well, I only had two. Of the two, I like the Moscow Mule the best. Okay. So let's start with the Lemon Drop.
The Lemon Drop. All right. Teresa, you should have come by.
You should have come by, Teresa.
Given you some.
I know. I actually was going to go check out some grocery stores to see if I could find some, but my day was like... You know, it was like a COVID brewery owner day, and I didn't really get there.
It happens.
So it's available in the local stores.
What I can what I can say already is this is a very full can because it's not carbonated, so you can squeeze a little bit more in there. Yeah,
right. So the cans will splash you a little bit.
A little bit,
unfortunately.
And they're 12-ounce cans, Jamil.
12-ounce cans. By law, they can't be bigger than 12 ounces.
Oh, yeah, because the alcohol. Yeah, makes sense.
Right. Well, it wouldn't matter what the ABV is. It's
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's because it's got distilled spirits in it.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Interesting.
They have a limit on it.
So I can't say I'm too familiar with the Lemon Drop other than ordering it for chicks when I was like 22 going out to bars. So what I'm getting is a light lemon quality. And a lot of like candy sugar, like not just straight sugar, but like candied, darker sort of, you know, whatever.
It should be, you know, sugary, sweet, but balanced with the acidity of the lemon and its bright, fresh lemon.
It is bright, fresh, you know, lemon. Drop.
High ABV with, a ton of lemon, ton of sugar. It's kind of like lemonade.
It's interesting. We talk about on the show like, a balance, or we talk about, I lost my train. I just totally lost it. Sorry.
Right. Well, there is a balance to, a Lemon Drop. It's the balance of, very present and bold, citrus, lemon, sharp, acidic. With, backing sugar, to not only provide a sweetness balance, but the fullness. So part of what you're tasting, JP, when you're mentioning the candy and all that, that's that fullness in your mouth, right? That makes it kind of a bigger, richer experience versus, something really thin and watery,
Yeah.
Part of the trick of a cocktail is, to give some body to it. And, the thing you do on a Lemon Drop is, more sugar, different types of sugar, things like that.
Okay.
I mean, a little bit of orange juice.
So, I mean, it is a lot like building a beer in a way. And this takes me back to our last Dr. Homebrew show when I was talking to the guys about cocktails and how you sort of, you need something in that mid palate to sort of squeeze you on through. Otherwise it's an alcohol bomb or a citrus bomb. And you can't have that. We were drinking a porter that I felt needed just some zhuzh, just a little bit of right there in the bottom. And it didn't have it, but that's, that's neither here nor there. So when you go to build something like this, do you go out to bars and order Lemon Drops? Do you have people make them for you? How do you land at a Lemon Drop for this thing?
So when we first started, serving, cocktails and stuff, we're blessed with a tap room where we can serve cocktails. And, we tested, customers. I brought in groups. We it's back before the pandemic, so we could, you know, right. go through the beer side and say, hey, yeah. come on over and taste some cocktails.
Man, I was never there for that. Were you ever there for that, Teresa? I don't know.
And we would
I totally missed that.
We do a lot of experimentation.
I'm sure Jamil's gotten shit for this.
We kind of dial things in.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the, you know, you know, Malcolm, right?
Maybe.
Used to do customer service and more beer, but he is our head distiller.
No, I'd never met Malcolm.
So he's a big cocktail guy.
Okay.
And so he's, you know, done a lot of experimenting, and he would give us the cocktails that, you know, he thought we would enjoy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and they were always good, you know, when he would make a cocktail, but then we'd refine them and polish them against, you know, this slew of people. We would make him stand in there, and we'd bring, you know, 100, 200 people by, and he'd have to make lemon drops for all these people. And, you know, we did that with him. This is why it took 2 years to, you know, kind of perfect, you know, what we were doing. And then, you know, the work is, okay, how do we make this in bulk? Instead of one glass at a time, how do you make, you know, 30 barrels of lemon drop? So, you know, part of that is, okay, let's take all the same ingredients and let's scale it up. And, you know, sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't. I mean, we did dump $12,000 worth of ingredients at one point, and that was without the alcohol.
Jamil.
Oh, man.
You know, so, I mean, it just, you know,
It's a lot like the beer
side.
It's
a labor of work.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot like beer, too. You know, they say you can't scale. Yeah. If you scale, what is it, something that's a 5 gallon batch up to like a 20, it's not linear. It's even that short of a jump is not linear. You still have to make adjustments to get it to taste the same. I can't imagine with a cocktail. I mean, you know, we make cocktails in batches sometimes or whatever for parties, but that doesn't work either. You're still constantly sort of like sampling and tasting. So I can't imagine. On that scale with something as with beer, I feel like you're sort of, I don't know, trapped by, you've done all you can, now it's in the fermenter, so you can't really mess with it afterwards. But with a cocktail like this, you can still monkey with it before canning it.
Right.
And with beers, you have a roadmap. I mean, with this, you're making it up. So your R&D is going to be much deeper.
Hey, you know, one of the advantages to cocktails is that, you know, everything's already kind of made already. With beer, you make these ingredients and then you ferment them, and then you got to depend upon the fermentation. And then you're pretty much done. Although you can add hops and other, you know, flavorings, but you're pretty much done. Whereas with the cocktails, you could taste each individual ingredient and then you blend them together. So that helps in a way, because, you know, it's possible to taste and to say, no, less of that, more of this. Or, you know, one of the things that Malcolm and I spent, you know, weeks or months on was sitting there. And it's like, I would tell him, it's like, all right, so make the same thing and try, you know, 5 different amounts of lemon juice. Try 5 different amounts of, sugar. Try 5 different amounts of this, you know, and through that process, you know, find the balance. It's a lot of tasting. It's a lot of, you know, if you have to be able to tell the difference between, you know, 1 drop and 2 drops. Mm-hmm. And if you can't, you're not going to be able to dial it in. I think that's the struggle for a lot of people is, you know, they'll drink something and go, yeah, it's good. And it's like, well, yeah, that's good. But is it, you know, great? You know, you need to try other, you know, settings across all the ingredients. And then you can kind of dial it in and then it tastes great.
It seems like you haven't really reset your parameters between beer and wine, or beer and cocktails, rather. You know what I mean? Because you were always constantly like, how do I make this better? How can I improve this? And you're not taking feedback as, oh, this porter is good or this IPA is good. Well, yeah, but how I improve it? How can it be better?
Well, that's very kind of you. Yeah. And you have to kind of, you know, tweak and adjust. Because if you're not, you know, you're just going to make some okay stuff. If you're fine with okay, then that's it. But, you know, everything you make, you know, there's stuff we make today that there's a few things I think, oh, my God, that's perfect. I can't make that better. You know, we need to, you know, do it just like that. And then, you know, there's other stuff I'm like, yeah, it's really good, but I don't think it's perfect. I think we need to keep tweaking it. And so we're constantly, you know, I'll tell Andrew, he's our, you know, director of brewing operations now. I tell him, I was like, oh, be prepared because I want to make some tweaks on the water of, you know, this beer or that beer. I want to start messing with this and that, you know. And what we do is, you know, we'll do multiple batches where on certain beers we have, you know, a couple of batches a week, you know, large batches a week being brewed. And I'm able to make a little tweak and say, okay, so let's take, you know, 5 kilos of this hop out and let's replace it with 5 kilos of this hop in something that has, you know, 200 kilos of hops in it. You'd think, oh, you won't taste that. Oh, nobody knows. And you could, most consumers will have no idea. But when you have the opportunity to taste them side by side, you're like, yep, I taste it. That's yeah, different. And but, it's different this way or that way. And you get the chance to tweak it, you know.
But do you really taste it, or is it because you know you change something?
No, so we do a lot of blind triangle tests. Mm-hmm. So I always have them give them to me blind.
Okay.
And Andrew's always, he's very good about this. It's just like, you know, he has like a triangle, a square, and a circle. He has, you know, 1, 1, 2, 3. He has A, F, you know, X. He has, you know, weird symbols.
Okay. And, he's very detailed, you know, about labeling it. Yeah.
Right. So I have no idea. You know, I've got an idea what the test is.
Right.
But I always go into it completely blind. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I can tell them, it's like, you know, no, these two are different than this one. And here's the difference. And so I think he's come to know that I'm able to pick that stuff out. And so, you know, it's a... wouldn't say symbiotic. I would say, you know, it is a synergistic relationship.
Maybe
where where the tests we're doing mean something. You know, it's not just, oh, I like this better because we did it different.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. So I'm always doing it blind, and he doesn't give me any hint. He just drops them on the table and walks away.
That's what I do too. That's how I met Taryn. Yep. Yeah. So, but I mean, you're just a tinkerer anyways. Like, you sort of futz around with stuff. Are you going to do that with the cocktails?
No. Well, yes.
Okay.
But I don't like tinkering.
Really?
I like
You seem to do it a lot.
Things.
Well, but it's the same thing, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, you had that old ratty ass, RV that you offed on Justin. You have a brewery, you know, which is constantly in need of that shit.
I am a business genius. I got rid of that RV and gave it to Justin.
Huh? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying, I've seen it. I saw it before and I saw it after, and it was definitely in better condition before. But
I mean, you're right in a way. I do think almost everything could be better. I don't think very many things are perfect.
Yeah.
But there are things that are perfect. And we need to accept that they are perfect. We need to just enjoy perfection.
Have you ever made a perfect beer?
When people cannot recognize perfect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And perfect's in the eye of the beholder, right?
Sure.
When you hold your child, your child's perfect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Or, you know.
Well, I think there's so many opportunities to put energy into all those things that aren't perfect. You know, you really should just have a line. It doesn't have to be perfect, but if it's above the line, you're not going to worry about it anymore. If it's below the line, that's, you got to get those things to get up to the line.
Well, all right. So, right. I agree with you. There is a line where I will serve stuff in our tap room. I will send stuff out for sale. It needs to meet my line of, you know, I think this is acceptable.
Yeah.
However, that does not absolve it from the need to be perfect. What I tend to do is kick in the butt all the things that are really, you know, whatever's the lowest thing. It's like trying to spin plates or whatever. You're trying to keep all of them up to perfection. And so you're constantly checking everything and going like, oh, this one's falling off. And so you start kicking that one in the butt. And then, you know, you constantly are trying to rise everything to perfection. And, you know, every once in a while, something is perfect. Don't, you know, but more often than not, most things are not perfect. They could be close to perfect, whatever. And, you know, the whole Japanese thing about, you know, the perfection being, you know, beauty being, you know, something, you know, in the small flaws of something,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
You know, I find things.
Sounds like bullshit to me.
I like, you know, and here's a good example is, you know, a great British cask ale, you know, or so, you know, that has a slight bit of butteriness to the background,
mm-hmm.
not bold, but just a touch in the background. Is that perfect? Yeah, because that little bit, you know, if it was all perfect fermentation, didn't have any diacetyl whatsoever, it's like the thing would be insipid, you know.
Yeah, it
takes that little bit to add a fullness and a smoothness to it and some flavor. And so that's one of the, you know, the values of having something that is, you know, less than perfect. If you had perfect fermentation or whatever, right?
Okay. I mean, look, man, whatever. You're the expert. What do I know? I want to take a quick break.
Right. Okay.
Because we're going to get on the cocktail here. We're going to talk a little bit more about cocktails and beers in general and blending stuff and flavors and you know, all that kind of fun stuff. So hang on, everybody. It's the session. We're talking with Jamil from Heretic, of course. We'll be right back.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
Fermented.
It's the session.
Right! Yeah!
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're still hanging out here with Jamil and Teresa. We're chatting about cocktails. And what I want to do is bust open this Moscow Mule. Because this was the first
my favorite
example of a Heretic cocktail in a can, and I was honestly very surprised because, you know, I was talking during the break with some people on the Facebook chat. Moscow Mules are good. They're probably one of the more refreshing cocktails that you can get, right? But it depends on who makes them. And then, like I said, I realize that's the most obvious statement in the world for a dumbass to make. But it is really true because you can... But they're also... If you fuck up a Moscow Mule, it's still drinkable because it's a bunch of ginger beer, right? But it's so... I don't know. It sort of does have a lot of, like, leeway in how it's made. But if you get a perfectly balanced Moscow Mule, those are hard to forget. And, yeah, I opened this, man, the other night. And poured over ice and gave half to my wife. And I was like, damn, give me that back. This is very, very good. It's a very good Moscow Mule. It's 10%. So, yeah, chat with me a little bit about this, Jamil. How did you land on the recipe for the old Moscow Mule? Was this another Malcolm issue?
Well, it was tough. because the first thing we did was start with a bunch of different ginger beers.
Yep.
I mean, we made it, you know, all these cocktails are made from making one cocktail and making it great, you know, working that. And that took months. And then once we had a cocktail that everybody agreed was like the best Moscow Mule we could make, then the process comes of, okay, how do we do this in bulk? And, you know, you can't get like a shaker and, you know, make a Moscow Mule and pour it in the fermenter.
A seven-barrel shaker. Yeah, man.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, one cocktail at a time. So part of it was kind of deconstructing what all the ingredients were of the ginger beer, because the various ginger beers, it was just impossible to get in bulk, the ones that we liked. And so we started deconstructing what a great ginger beer is. And we started with that and worked on that, because we had the rest of the stuff was easily repeatable. It was the same lime juice, it was the same vodka, it was, you know, everything was the same. It was just this ginger beer. And so we started breaking down how to make a great ginger beer. And then, so this is one of those things where we actually take a kettle, we make our ginger broth, you know, and we experimented for months on how to make the ginger broth. So there are, I will tell you, I won't give you, counter to my beer information, I won't tell you a whole lot about how we do this.
Why?
One of the things that you need to do on the ginger broth is you need to experiment with the concentration, the ratio of ginger to water, the temperature of the water, the time, and there's just a number of things that you need to experiment with.
Why are you being
because the flavor changes. Uh-huh. When you're trying to extract ginger into water, you get you can get something really bitter and biting. You can get something smooth and sweet. You can get something without any real ginger aroma. You can get things with, you know, better ginger flavor. There's a lot of parameters that go into extracting ginger. And I think that that's one of the things when you find a great ginger beer, mm-hmm. it's one of the things that they have figured out. It's like, oh, wait, you know, this is how you extract ginger.
Yeah.
It's shocking how different, time, concentration, the amount of ginger to water, it's a huge factor in what kind of flavor you get out of it.
I love that you're being very coy suddenly. You know, I love that much. And then also at the same time, it's annoying.
Well, we used to make ginger beer as a soda in the tap room.
Yeah.
And it's involved. I mean, we used to make root beer. We used to make ginger beer. And ginger beer, while I love it, I'm not sure I would make too much of it unless I was aiming to do something like what Jamil is doing.
Yeah.
Because, it's that much work.
Yeah. No, thanks, man. For me, the best ginger beers are punch you in your kneecaps, ginger spicy.
Super spicy.
Yeah, where it almost just flares. It makes your nostrils flare inadvertently, where it's like, oh, yeah, this is very powerful. Right. Like, it's almost like you can channel the medicinal properties of the ancient Chinese, you know, herbalists and shit like that, where you're like, oh, oh my God, I have no more gout. Like, this is because it smells so, like, powerful. Because I don't know, that's what I like. I like that punchiness.
Mm-hmm.
Which the Moscow Mule has a little bit, but it I guess that's part of the reason that struck me about why this cocktail to me is so good, is because you get that and then quickly it sort of cleaves off and it's, you know, smooths out with the rest of the product. So it's not overpowering, which is with any sort of compilation of ingredients is not what you want. You want everything to kind of complement, but there are some things that can poke out in cocktails that I don't think can poke out in beers. And correct me if I'm wrong. Like, and I'm not talking IPA where it's like this is the point, right? Is to have this big spike in hop flavor. But you're talking American stout. Maybe you can have a little bit of the roasted, like, well, you have to have some of the roasted quality poke out a little bit. But for the most part, it's smooth. But some cocktails are like, you know, focused on the ginger, like. Bam, this is a Moscow Mule. It has ginger in it. That's just the thing. Do you find that cocktails can sort of have that, like, more forgiveness than beer styles can?
I don't know. I think you want in everything, almost everything, is you want bold but balanced, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the way beers drink well. I think that's the way that foods, you know, eat and cocktails drink. And, you know, you want some bold flavors in there, but you want it all to balance out in the end to where you can, you know, easily, you know, or you want to finish the rest of, you know, what it is you're consuming. So yeah. I think, you know, balance is huge, but I think more and more we want a little bit of boldness and stuff. It's like you're talking about the Greek recipe book. It's like it was, I'm sure it was all really good. It's just, you want some bold, you know.
You got to have something.
Boldness to it, some spikiness to it, you know, and then balanced out into the finish. You know, you can have something like a, you know, a spicy curry that is very bold and it's got some, you know, some real, you know, punch and heat to it, but it's got balancing. It's got, you know, a little cooling or creamy on the back. Maybe they've used some coconut, you know, to kind of, you know, give that background to take away some of the heat. And, you know, by the time you're finished with it, you know, you go, ooh, you know, but, you know, it's finished. It's finished just right, you know?
Yeah.
But I think everything we consume should be that way.
I agree too.
Like it's a journey. Like you come back to a place that is fulfilling instead of just being left out and spicy or bland or too sharp or what have you.
Locally sourced ginger. Is there a big ginger field in Fairfield? I'm just making fun of you. I like it. I think it's a really good drink, man.
Yeah, as much as possible, we're trying to locally source ingredients, you know. You know, sometimes it's just difficult. Other times, you know, you find a good source like, our friend Rich, Teresa, you know, Thundering yeah. Herd Ranch, you know, they've got great mandarin oranges. I mean, just delicious. He, you know, he dropped off a sack of mandarins and I go through a 10 pound sack of mandarins probably in a week.
Which is very good for your stomach lining, I'm sure.
For me, it's like 2 days.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they're not that acidic. I mean,
okay, good.
They have their acid to them, but they got a sweetness and just a full flavored, really great mandarin orange flavor. Not just orange flavor, but mandarin orange flavor. Yeah. They're the best.
Yeah.
I think that they are just amazing. And so, you know, really, you know, we've had people approach us for, it's like, hey, we can get you mandarin juice cheaper and, you know, we can sell it to you frozen year round. And people have asked us, can you make the mandarin IPA year round? I'm like, no. So there's the one time that Rich can squeeze the mandarins for us.
Yeah.
And that's when we make it. And how much can we make? We can make as much as Rich can squeeze and that's it. You know? And so, you know, because I wouldn't accept anything else. You know, it's perfect, right? It's one of the, you know, we're very lucky here. You know, locally sourced means, you know, great mandarins, great apples, great pears, great, you know, so many things.
Yeah.
Here in California is, you know, it's one of those great agricultural areas, so. I think, you know, locally sourced can be fantastic. Now, I think you can carry that too far. and then you're just stupid for getting locally sourced. You need really great stuff.
Yeah.
That's like trucked for 5 hours or whatever, you know.
Because you can sort of pigeon your whole self, pigeon yourself also. You know, pigeonhole yourself is what I, it took me honestly 3 times to get right.
Right in the pigeon.
Fucking cocktails, yeah.
Yes, us breweries still love our Oregon fruit, even though we can get locally sourced mandarins.
Yeah.
We can't get locally sourced guava and pineapple. And
no.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, if somebody was growing guava here, it's like, well, you know.
Well, it's all supporting the local economy, man. I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I like that, man. It's very good. All right, so we have 2 left. The staycation and the sip. Which one goes next, man?
Go staycation.
Staycation. This one I have not had. I have not had this one yet because Brad failed to purchase this when he was there.
God damn, Brad.
Do I shake these?
That's another interesting thing.
Thank you.
You can shake them.
Okay.
There might be a slight bit of settling because, you know, again, you're using real fruit and stuff. We try to prevent that from, you know, huge settling from happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, anytime you're using real fruit and stuff, you're going to get a little bit of settling. So,
quick question from the chat. Do you distribute to Minnesota?
We don't currently. But if you have like a great distributor that, wants our brand, we'll be happy to do so.
Okay, perfect. Well, there you go, John from Facebook. All right, staycation. Tell me about this canned cocktail, please. Oh, shit. Okay, here's a good question. I opened the room temperature one. I have a cold one in my desktop fridge here. Is it going to matter too much, do you think?
It'll melt the ice a little bit more. Which
I don't have any ice.
So one of the things is, you know, most cocktail stuff, it's I think you're okay with, you know, the room temperature one because we have to deal with people pouring it, you know, or drinking it. There's people who drink these straight from the cans.
Oh my gosh. Of course they do.
Yeah. It says right on the can.
They're in their boat. They don't have a glass.
That's going to be me in 4 years, dude. Yeah.
You know, pour over ice, blend with ice, and all that stuff. Because it needs a little bit of dilution. It needs a little, you know, we're planning on these being with ice, which is traditional for a lot of cocktails, right? Even cocktails that are served without ice are generally shaken over ice and then strained out and served without the ice. So, and it's one of the reasons that it's 14% or 15% or, you know.
Yeah, this is 15, the Caribbean, the staycation.
Because you should, you know, include ice. So, serving a warm over ice, I think that's a good thing because it'll, you know, dilute it down.
Yeah.
So, this is, you know, a ton of pineapple and, orange and a little bit of passion fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, it hits you right off the bat, man. It's almost as powerful as like when you smell a soda that has these sort of tropical flavors in it. Mm-hmm. Not in a bad way, not an artificial way, because if you know a lot of those that are imported in the States sort of smell good. They don't smell fake. Yeah, but they smell good. They have that aroma that's like just programmed in, and that's sort of what I got out of this too. It's very powerful. In the nose, like, wow, this is very
tropical.
But
that fruitiness is in the flavor, too,
mm-hmm.
which I think is the important part.
Caribbean.
So with this amount of alcohol, you don't have to do any, like, driving? Pasteurization, do you? Or do you?
We do.
You do.
So, right. So, we essentially pasteurize all the ingredients that need to be pasteurized, but we don't pasteurize everything. So some of the things we work with are already aseptic, you know, Oregon fruit and all. You're right. We pasteurize essentially, the main thing is the sugar. So granulated sugar is what we work with. We're not big enough to get syrups. I've been getting quotes on truckloads of sugar. And we're still getting us from our Smart and Final down the road.
Oh, wow.
Actually, oh, my gosh.
They will order us pallets of sugar, and we drive down there. They come off the truck and go in our van, and they're like, yeah, that's what you want. So they're very nice.
Funny.
That's very smart.
I just went to Smart and Final the other day for a bunch of sugar.
So it's you know, but anytime something's granulated or dusted or whatever, there's bacteria in it. You have to be careful. It won't cause that product itself to go off because there's so low moisture in like granulated sugar. It's like honey, right? Honey doesn't go bad generally because the osmotic gradient is too great.
Sure.
And same thing with sugar. Bacteria lands on it. It sucks the moisture out of the bacteria and kills it. And so sugar is generally safe. But if you were to take that and, you know, dilute it down, at, you know, room temperature, you'd probably get bacteria growth. So we will pasteurize the sugar, the water. We'll mix hot water with the granulated sugar. And then if there's any other ingredient that's going in that needs pasteurization like that, we'll add that at that time. And then we cool that down. And then we add our other cocktail ingredients. I mean, one of the weird things like this, the staycation, I think it would be better if we were to make our own grenadine from base ingredients, because I think we could make a better grenadine than the grenadine we're purchasing.
Okay.
But again, the TTB, they want us to use grenadine in this Caribbean sunrise. It has to have grenadine.
Even, you know, so you can't make your own, which because it's just it's simple
syrup. I think what we should do is just make
It's simple syrup and pomegranate juice.
Yeah, you need to make your grenadine.
That's what grenadine is. Yeah,
right. Because I think we can make a better grenadine than we're buying, but we are buying, and the grenadine people will not sell it to us in bigger than 750 ml bottles. Ugh. So get pallets. No. Of 750 ml bottles.
What a waste.
And stand there for hours pouring grenadine into the fermenter.
Me too, honestly. I do this a lot. I mean, Teresa's right, and that sort of brings me brings up a good point. Are you going to ever package your own cocktail ingredients? Here's a bottle of grenadine. Here's a bottle of ginger beer. Here's a bottle of whatever, so people can go do that on their own. Right? It's pretty good.
That's why I'm good at
kissing.
Okay, so I'm not good at anything, but Teresa's really good at the ideas on. Yeah.
Anyway, that was my idea. What the fuck? I literally just had it. Don't give Teresa the credit.
You passed it. I passed it to you.
Sure.
And then you vocalized
it. It was a seed from Teresa, but
it's just that we've achieved this level of mental. Agility.
Yeah, something. JP. Sure, man. Yeah, that's exactly right.
No, but I actually think that's a great idea.
Well, you're welcome. Teresa and I bless this idea upon you.
I bless the idea, but I'm worried.
I need to write it down.
I'm worried that all the money is in the cocktails. I don't want Jamil to go chasing after dollars that aren't there. You know, I'm worried about his little brewery.
Well, I
want him to
that's right. I feel like what you're going to get is you're going to get more of the local market, the local customers coming in and buying it. I don't think you're ever going to have it at BevMo or Total Wine or anything like that, because there are like simple syrup manufacturers that are, you know, trying to do this shit too. But if you have the local, you have a really solid local customer base. I think that would be a great way to sort of bypass some of this, so you can make your own. Grenadine,
I think you're 100% right.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote it down because
hell yeah.
No, I think that there is a market for that. I mean, you see people, I mean, their entire business is just making like tonic. We looked into making our own tonic because we weren't happy with the tonics that were available. The problem is you have to control the amount of quinine that is in your tonic, and you have to measure it. Like every batch, you need to know exactly how much quinine is in there. And I, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, the root and or the bark and you're trying to extract it, how much did you extract? Well, then you got a test and then you got a dose. And I was like, that is really, and then I figured out a way to do it. And I'm just like, that works. All right. So I love tonic water. I love gin and tonic. It's one of my favorites.
Gin and tonics are great.
Yeah.
I'll get you set up with the HPLC method, Jamil.
All right.
Make this work.
What is okay. that? What's HPLC?
High pressure liquid chromatography or high okay. performance.
Okay.
Anyways, no, but I think the idea of doing our own cocktail ingredients, you know, it's like a restaurant doing their own barbecue sauce or something like that, or salad dressings.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I think there's a big market for it. And here we've built up a name. I think, you know, we could do something with that.
Well, I think off the strength of how good your cocktails are, I think you could definitely, you know, go a long way with that. Absolutely. Yeah, this is good, man. The staycation is good. For me, it's one of these more stronger tasting drinks that I think
big,
you
bold,
make.
Fruity, tropical.
Yeah, well, and it's the first one that really gives you that punch of alcohol also.
Yeah.
It's sort of almost, and you know, warm with no ice, it is sort of too much.
Oh, you had no ice?
I have no ice in any of these because I'm in my fucking office. Oh. Like, where am I going to keep ice, right?
But, I got ice. Yeah. Well, warm with no ice.
Man,
that's a bad move.
Yeah, it is a bad move. And I'm trying to still find, like, but I'm exhaling and I'm like, is there any Woo. Sort of open flame near
these
me?
These are like terrible judging conditions right here.
Yeah, man. Like, I don't know.
Well, I appreciate the kind comments. You should try it again with ice. All of these with ice.
Well, I still have the 49 that you gave me of this particular one. So
yes, I will get you more, brother.
No, man, I got, you know what, honestly, like I would never, and I'm not saying this because we're friends, and I'm not saying this because we're on the air.
Oh, we're friends?
Well,
friends now? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I've downgraded you from boyfriend to friend because I don't see you anymore. Right. Is that, I would never have really considered drinking cocktails from a can before.
A can, right.
Yeah, and honestly, because I've had some and I've had the let's just say I've had some and I don't want to drag names, but they're not good. The ones that I've had are not good.
Thing.
Like the one that I'm thinking of had they have a Bloody Mary one, and I've talked about it on the show. If you really want to find out, you already know. And it's like so spicy and so linear as far as flavor goes in the focus, like they were trying to make a overspiced Bloody Mary and they did it and it turned me off. I can't do it.
Right. You got to get the tomato in there. You've got to get there's a lot.
It's a
that
pillowy
needs to
like, right. So, but right. these are very good. You've definitely put a lot of effort into them and I would 100% purchase more next time I send Brad up there to get me beer.
Well, and you know, I think you know that's part of it is you know, you're looking for those flavors, you're looking for the, you know, you're trying to make a good experience in a can. And you know, if we go back just a few years, people were poo-pooing the idea of craft beer in a can. And
true.
You know, because you couldn't get great craft beer in a can, you got crap beer in a can.
Whoa.
And so
which was a huge burn.
You know, with a little bit of time and a little bit of effort, then now we're putting great craft beer in cans.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing's true with cocktails. I think, you know, there's just been some bad examples out there. And now, you know, you let loose a bunch of these creative bastards out there, you know, that are going to do some really crazy stuff and make some really great cocktails in cans. So I think it's just a matter of time.
And I sort of feel like it is born from craft beer. And
yeah.
And I wonder if it is because, you know, no matter what your brewery, I mean, you make a ton of styles at the brewery. Mm-hmm. But I think at some point, and correct me if I'm wrong, or don't because it makes me feel good, but no matter how many styles you make, I think you still feel handcuffed in a certain aspect because you're just making beer. You're making different gradients of beer. But canning cocktails is a whole different creative process for you. and for anybody. And so I feel like people getting into this avenue, it sort of speaks of like we have different backgrounds and experiences and flavors. Let's see what else we can do. Let's sort of stretch out from the craft beer world and see if we can shake up another market.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. Part of it was,
I'm right.
You know, just people ask me, they're like, well, why are you opening a distillery? You don't have enough to do? It's like, well, yeah, I got enough to do, but I love, you know, pursuing the challenge of, you know, more flavors, more, you know, it's more ingredients to work with.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, thank
you. Well, and right. You know, any customer that wanders into your place, they always want to have something new and different. And there's tons of people who end up in breweries who don't really like beer. So, you know, we've been trying to make beers for people who don't like beer. Now we're making seltzers for people who don't like beer. Like, if I could easily make cocktails for people who don't like beer, that's a bigger endeavor than I can undertake right now. But I mean, that would be.
Well,
that's awesome.
Teresa, I think that's a good point, is because we've talked a lot about on this show in particular about breweries making beers for people who don't necessarily like beers, and you sort of like tailor it to beers, or, you know, we've all had beers from breweries who make solid beers, but there's one or two beers that seem to sort of hit the middle ground of a style, be it an amber ale or a pale ale or whatever. Not too offensive, not too whatever. But do you think that in your case, making a seltzer would free up that sort of like focus on making beer for everybody and then just making beer that you want to make? Is that a thought?
We always make beer that we want to make.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Making the seltzer though, I mean, honestly, I would bag on the seltzer more if I didn't enjoy it as much as I do. I kind of like it. In the summer?
Yeah.
I love a glass full of ice and a seltzer. I think that's super,
the only,
super good.
The only craft seltzer I've had, I haven't had yours yet, is the 21st Amendment seltzer under the Soma brand. Which is in the Safeway. It's very good. It's it's a lot like what we're talking about. It's those lighter flavors that don't taste artificial. And it's like, it is, I shit all over seltzers before I had one. And I'm like, I get it. And it's not my favorite thing.
Yeah.
But now I at least understand what the draw is. It's something different for people. And I think that's also why people like you, Teresa, and you, Jamil, are making different shit now. It's not that it's popular or you like to drink it or whatever. It's that it is a different thing to do. It's just different.
Well, I think the thing is not to necessarily make something different, but if you are experimenting with something different, to make the best that you can do. And instead of just trying to slap out some crap, you know, seltzer, you know, make a real craft seltzer. Use real fruit, you know, do the right thing and make something that's, you know, worthy of the cause. You know, the same thing about, you know, all the other beers and cocktails and everything else. You know, it's because it's not about, oh, making something that somebody will buy, something will drink. I mean, sure it is to stay in business, but, you know, it's better to go out of business than it is to just sell your soul for making crap. What you need to do is, you know, be true to yourself and to your heart and to what you're saying is, this is, you know, the craft that I apply. This is my, you know, this is my star. This is how I do how I live my life. And if you're doing that, it doesn't matter what you're doing or what you're making. If you're making little cutouts to sell on Etsy, or you're making seltzer, or you're, you know,
have a Disneyland podcast.
Making candles out of, you know, something, or, you know, whatever you're doing, you're growing mandarins up on the hill, or you're, I just met somebody who's making honey locally, you know, if you're, you know, the farmer that takes our grain, and, you know, these people that I'm dealing with, they, you know, love, you know, what they're doing, and they really are focused on, well, I'm going to make the best. I'm going to make, you know, that's the important part. And whether you are or not, if your focus is in being, true to, providing something that is wonderful, and if you fail at it, it's okay. That should be your goal, right? You know, it's like the Brewing Network clearly fails at providing the best beer radio, but it absolutely tries.
Yep. Yeah, every day.
Let's take a real quick break, everybody, and we're going to come back. We'll wrap it up. I have another cocktail to drink, and I want to talk to Jamil real fast about, in general terms, how everything's going over in Heretic with COVID and all that kind of fun stuff, because we gotta throw it in there every now and then. You know what I mean? Anyway, it's the session, everybody. Hang on. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into the session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, welcome, everybody. Thanks for hanging around. We're just about to wrap things up here with our close personal handsome friend, Jamil from Heretic, of course. And I'm cracking open the last of the canned cocktail line, the SIP, or Shelter in Place, you guys. It's very clever.
Great.
It's very clever. I'm going to sip on this. So this one, I think, says shake. Yeah, it says shake, but I didn't shake it. Again. I had this the other night in the hot tub, and I was like reading the can. I was like, oh, fuck, I was supposed to shake it.
Well, shake with ice.
Oh, okay. All right, put it in a shaker and then shake it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I didn't do that. I still don't have ice, but at least I opened the cold one.
Ice where JP is really limited.
It really is, man. All my freezers are stocked with food.
Yeah. Deepest, darkest Africa, there is no ice.
That's right. That's right. Tell me about the SIP, please. Botanical gin. Let's go.
Yeah. So we make three different gins. Actually, we've made like many different gins. Why does it look brown?
I realize that my color's off. It definitely is not brown. It is a very deep shade of pink.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, on the screen, it does look brown. It is not brown at all.
It does look brown.
Yeah.
It looks like amber ale.
Yeah. like whiskey.
No. We make multiple kinds of gins. And one of them is kind of our botanical herbal gin. Mm-hmm. And then, what this is a gin gimlet, which is a gin with lime and, so this is gin, blackberry, lavender, and lime.
Okay. Interesting. I get all of those flavors, which is not common in a cocktail, honestly. Because I think
you get the floral up front.
Yes.
Then you'll get the blackberry. You get the blackberry much more bold in the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of lime.
But
in
I mean,
the background, kind of tightening it up, give it a citrus and a little bit of backing bitter.
Yeah. Well, I definitely at the end, that definitely cleans it up. And that's what I mean. You know, in general, cocktails, you don't really, some aren't really made to stand out like this. But I feel like in this one, everything works really well. It sort of like oozes from one flavor to the next in like a cascading kind of thing. And I like that. I appreciate it because
the main word is a transition for my employees is ooze. Yes.
Well, look, man, I'm what you call a marketer. So, I'm a wordsmith. I'm a marketer. Like, this is what I do, man.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Obviously, I'm really good at it. It's very dark, very rich. But yeah, the flavors are there. It's very easy drinking, 15% too. So I mean, this is
a glass of wine. Gin comes through. You get that. If you don't like gin, I don't know, but a lot of people who don't like gin or who haven't, you know, haven't really experienced gin, they'll taste something like, oh, okay, I get what gin is. Once the gin is kind of, you know, balanced out with some other things. If you try and drink gin straight,
no,
it's an acquired taste.
No. Yeah,
masochists.
And gin and tonic is great, but you gotta like gin.
For sure.
And you like tonic.
Yeah, well, and what turned me on to gin was going to NHC so many times, because eventually you're like, I am so fed up with beer. I need something to completely, you know, demolish my taste buds and get all of this malt off. And gin and tonic will do that. And so that is my 100%. If I'm done drinking beer, give me a gin and tonic and just keep them coming until I throw up on you.
Have I given you our three gins?
Have I done?
I thought I gave you our three gins. Maybe
I think
not.
We did at one point when we had you guys on Heads and Tails with Warren and I.
There you go.
Well, there you
I
go.
I guess.
But it was like two years
ago.
Warren.
I feel like beer people. Yeah.
Fuck Warren. He never responds to my text about the show. He's gone.
Yeah, Warren should have been on the show.
I agree. I'll hear from him in two weeks.
He has inside knowledge.
I'll hear from him in 2 weeks. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just picking this up now. A lot of good that does me. I don't care.
Right.
Whatever.
I'm envying Warren's life right now. The vagabond lifestyle.
Yeah, I guess, man. I don't know. I mean,
you have to have the beard, though.
You really do. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never have that beard.
I don't know. I think you could rock that beard. Probably better than Warren does.
Stating the obvious.
Yeah. I mean, I knew I could. I just, you know.
Could he have this hair? That's what I want to know.
No. He's probably bald as an egg in another 3 years.
I would love to see Warren in dreads. I would love to see Warren having dreads. I think that would be the most humorous thing I could think of.
Dreads.
That's just so much
dreads
hair.
In his beard, though.
Well, no. Dreads. Yeah, well, that's true.
It's beard dreads.
I don't see that man.
Beard
is...
dreads. Yes, right before he cuts his beard. I don't know. When Warren came to visit me, he's visited me a few times at the brewery, but one day we were canning.
Okay.
And Warren, being who he is, immediately jumped in and was like helping out on the canning line, like packing off. But he was like
gross
right in front of the conveyor.
Right. He's packing off.
And
in front
the mom
of
me was just like, oh my God, the beard. Like the beard
have
is
no
like
sense
right
of
next
common
to the
decency.
Conveyor.
Oh yeah. Well, and
I mean, I know he's got that covered, but I was just like, my God.
Well, see, the thing about
it's
Warren
so
is
scary.
He probably had no idea it was right next to the conveyor.
I'm sure he knew.
He's like the Mr. Magoo in the brewing world, where he just stumbles into shit and nothing kills him or hurts him, but almost.
he's got a sixth sense or a seventh sense,
a fourth
a beard
sense.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's like his tentacles, so he can feel what's going on.
That's right,
his testicles. Yeah.
He's the Cthulhu in the beer world.
I gotta say,
I don't know anything about his testicles.
They're very small.
Sure.
Yeah, they're very tiny.
I love Warren.
No, really.
Warren's the best to work with. He came back after he did his stint at Los Alamos or Los Gatos or whatever it was.
Yeah.
he came here and did like 6 months in the distillery. And it was there was a moment where we've worked together a few times during that, but the boiler went down one day and he and I were there, you know, working through what all the problems were. And it was, I turned to him, I said, it's so good to work with you again. It's nice because he has the same kind of weird mentality I do as, you know, solving problems. So, I love the guy.
He's good.
Yeah.
Well, someone has to, man.
The best.
Yeah. speaking
weird as fuck, but he's the best.
Yeah. That's right. Well, speaking of the brewery, Jamil, how's everything going with COVID? I know right now in California, most of us are shut down, but you guys aren't, right? Your county's open.
Right. So through the wisdom of the state of California, they grouped California into five regions.
Yeah.
Solano County is in the Bay Area region. And the Bay Area region, once being grouped, decided Oh My God, Santa Clara, and wherever was really becoming quite close to the 15%. I think they got down to 20. And so they decided to shut down. You know, they had a meeting of the six counties, and they're just like, we're closing down, even though some of us are at 35, 50%, you know, whatever percentage, we're closing down. And Solana was like, we're at 35%, so we're good. Decided not to participate. So we're still open because of that.
Wow.
You know, it's an interesting place that we're in with a lot of, more blue collar, a lot of military, and, folks that, they will follow rules and they will, do what needs to be done, good people. So, if the rules are telling whatever the rules are, they'll follow those rules. But, they also, they're pretty solid folk, and
I think, here's what I love about people in the military, most of them anyway, is you're right, they will follow the rules and they'll do whatever's asked of them, but they will fucking talk shit about those rules to the fucking cows come home, right? And it's because they have these solid opinions. Everybody in the military I've ever met, if you get them going, they have very specific and loud opinions about the mechanics of the things that they work in, the rules that they have to follow and whatever.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's sort of a cool thing about that. Like, you can complain all you want, but you're still going to follow them. And until the rules change, then that's just what it is.
It's the right of the enlisted to complain about, what the rules are.
Yeah.
But, they'll also go out and fight for, everybody else. So they'll go out and risk their lives to, save, the country that we love. And, it's a pretty amazing thing that those folks. So, it's kind of a different county in that way. And so I think the county was just like, we're good.
We're not going to do it.
Keep doing what we're doing.
How do you feel about that?
We're down to just outdoor only. And, I think with a good breeze and, minimal people at a table and separation between the tables, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever the rules are, we will follow. Teresa and I were talking about how I mentioned my friend Jason at True Symmetry. That we came across was, when somebody comes to drink at your place, they will have, one, two, maybe three pints, and, then they're done. They're good. And then we'll go home. And then, if somebody comes down and they can't drink that and it's to go only, they will buy a case, and then they'll buy a growler, and then maybe a six pack of that and a four pack of that. And they'll take that all home, and they will pretty much drink all that in 2 days.
Wow.
And so they will drink so much more and buy so much more if it was to go only, that being open to a really limited amount of space doesn't really help us. But, people need a place to go. They need a place to get out of the house. And so, for a lot of people, it is going down and just having a pint, even if it's by themselves, 12 feet away from anybody else, mask on most of the time, except when they're taking a sip of a beer. It really mentally helps a lot of people. So I think, just in general, I think, being there for them, it's fine. Even if I think it's better to, and a lot less labor to just do to go only, it's fine.
You're okay with everything.
I'll do whatever you need me to do to help, people in our community do well.
Yeah.
I'll do.
Okay.
I'm there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why do anything?
Right.
You're being a piece of crap.
Seriously. I mean, I imagine you're not getting a lot of people griping at your staff about the mask policy. And, you know, it's all over the internet, where a lot of places, especially, I don't want to call any region out, but I'm going to, like the Midwest, there's a lot of reports online about people just sort of being dickheads to servers and people who are making minimum wage plus tips. You know, like they have to feed their families and these people are bitching at them because they're forced to wear a mask. It's like, it's not these people's fault. So
I imagine
you don't get any of that because
zero complaints.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to
hear. We've had a couple of people come in going like, I forgot my mask. I lost my mask. My mask is in my car. Yeah. And we have some masks for those people.
Oh, good.
But nice. Yeah, no, in general, people are very respectful. Again, like I said, this where we're located.
Yeah.
It's more blue collar. It's more, you know, they understand and they're willing to, you know, help a brother out. They're willing to, you know, follow along. You know, if that's what you want, that's what you want. And
yeah,
you don't get, I think, you know, you get self-entitled people elsewhere. You know, you don't get them here. There's very few self-entitled people around.
That must
here.
Be great, man. Well, I live pretty far away, so you're probably right about that.
I mean, I would consider you the cutoff.
That's right, the bar.
You know, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There, clearly, you have the problem.
That's true. No, I walk around like I own this fucking house. I don't know. So when you, have you had to pivot at all, or have you had to adjust your business model? I imagine you have. Has that impacted you at all as far as whoa, we have a drop in people incoming? Do you have to expand more to distribution, or how do you sort of rebound from all this and stay afloat?
Yeah, it's been nuts. So the first thing that happened was draft sales went away overnight.
Oh yeah, which I imagine is a giant part of your business. I mean, right. Every time I go there, that place is packed. We're waiting for tables. Well, I'm having to wait for a fucking table in my own place. No. Okay.
Not even that. It's, you know, in distribution. The tap room, is one thing, which is really important to us. But the, you know, we distribute a lot of draft beer and a lot of packaged beer. And we immediately lost a giant portion of our business. Now, packaged beer increased, you know, people buying 10 cases of toilet paper and, you know, two cases of beer, you know, it went through the roof. But the problem with that is the margins on packaged beer, bottles and cans, is much lower than it is on draft. So we kept making the same amount of beer, but it shifted from a draft model to a package model. So we were selling the same amount of beer, but our gross dollars went up, but our profits were not as good. And then the tap room went from, you know, probably lost about half of our tap room revenue, which is huge to us. So overall, yeah, it was a huge hit. We were able to keep all the brewery people employed. The tap room staff, you know, most people got their hours cut, partially because we changed our open hours and we're just 2 to 8 every day of the week, instead of what we're doing before. And so they got their hours cut because of that. Got their hours cut because instead of being packed where JP can't get a table, even though he knows me and knows he doesn't need to.
I have never thrown your name around and I never will. I can't do it. I just can't do it.
Oh, man.
Because he can't pronounce my name. That's
well, right. Yeah. Jamel Zane Scheif.
And they just have no idea what he's talking about. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, we were talking about how, in a way, it'd be better to just do to go only. But the problem with that is it cuts more labor hours. So what we're trying to do now is just keep as many people employed as much as possible. And, because as long as it's a break even and we're not, you know, completely shooting ourselves in the foot and collapsing the business where everybody goes out of a job,
yeah.
We want to keep everybody employed and active and, you know, getting money rolling into their pockets so they can survive. So it's really tough for a lot of our employees. Damn. Now me here in the high castle, you can see the castle windows behind yes, me. Uh-huh, I may look down upon the small people
sure.
that work for us. You know, everything's fine.
Sure. So. You wave the flag at them to let them know that they can see you.
But I have heard that they are suffering.
Well, when they still have to tithe to work there, but you know, you've reduced the tithe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's very kind of you, Jamil.
It is. It is the least I could do for the small people populate.
And it really is your kingdom.
The confines of the heretic brewing lands.
Well, yes. I don't know, man. To me, all that shit's super interesting. You know, as maybe tedious by now as it is to talk about or even to listen to. I don't know. I'm always interested in how people react to adversity like this, and you know, I don't know what I would do, but I think maybe you're sort of like caught up in the machine so much where you have to keep it going no matter what. I mean, you're not going to just quit.
Yeah,
you got to keep chugging along.
Well, you know,
it's just so much about like thinking about what you can control versus what you can't, and trying to make the best of what you actually can do something about.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can walk away, but you know, it's not just you. There's 50 other people that, you know, this is their livelihood. When it was just me and Chris and Beardy, I could have walked away at any time.
Yeah, fuck those guys. Yeah.
You two, go get another job. right. Now it's become something much more serious. And that's what keeps me up at night is like, we need to make sure that these people have jobs. We need to make sure that they have good jobs. We need to make sure that, you know, they're safe. We need to make sure they're not being exposed to COVID. You know,
are you stressed?
A number of things.
Are you stressing out about it? Do you stress out about it?
I do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these people are very important to me. They, you know, they're more than just, you know, they're not, they're employees. They're, you know, they're family. You know, you don't hire people to be employees. You don't hire somebody who's like, well, that piece of crap will do. You hire people that you think are great. You hire people that you think, oh, I like this person. I think this person is smart. I think this person's hardworking. I think this person will do a great job. I think this person will fit in and be part of our team, right? Be part of the family. And, you know, If you feel that way about somebody, how can you go about just, you know, blowing them off when something like this happens? You know, especially when, you know, oh, there's people who don't work out, but, you know, the people who have, the people who've put their, you know, they're really putting their sweat equity into your business. You owe them something in return. Yeah. You owe them, some measure of, you know, care, some measure of, hey, you know, I need to keep their paychecks rolling. It's the most important thing in the world to me is to make sure their paychecks are rolling. The very first thing that ever happens with money in this company is paychecks are paid. All the rest of it doesn't matter. You know, our employees get their check. They can count on that day in, day out, forever. You know, that's the most important thing in the world. You know, it's tough. I've been in business and corporate life for a long time, and I've seen some brutal crap where people are just, you know, they execute 300 people.
Wow.
And they have no care, no sense of, you know, fairness or life or anything, you know, or what should happen. And yeah, people go, oh, well, you know, it's just business. Yeah, you know, F you, business. It's you know, these are human beings. And I don't care if they were good employees, bad employees, whatever. You know, when you just cut off 300 people at a time, that's something serious. You know, it affects a lot of people that can't, you know, pay for, you know, their child's medicine or whatever. You know, it's serious.
You're a bleeding heart, Jamil.
I am. I am. Yeah. I think, you know, if you run a business, you've chosen to be part of the community and part of the business of the community. If you don't, live up to that responsibility, then you are just a leech on the community. You're just taking money from the community.
Wow.
You need to be willing to give that money back to the community. You can take your fair portion, but you need to be, a supporter of the community.
Wow, very socialist of you, Jamil. Some would call you a socialist. Why don't you go join AOC on her fucking Twitch stream? What some people would say to you.
Hey, I have no problem with being rich. Somebody want to write me a check for $1 billion for Heretic Brewing?
I know.
I'll tell you where to send the check.
Really?
I just think, there's nothing wrong with making money. I want to be rich. I want to be a billionaire.
Sure.
But
who doesn't, man?
You can't do it just off the backs of your employees.
No, it's not right.
You can't do it by, taking 5 cents an hour from your employees. And a lot of people are doing that. I think, and you can't blame the pandemic on your employees. You have to, you have to step up and do the right thing. And then I think the people that are part of your family, your team, your employees, they'll step up for you and deliver you the results that you need and that you deserve. But not if you, grind them into the dirt when something sort of goes wrong. Pandemic. It's just a passing thing. I don't know.
For sure. I mean, look at Amazon. Bezos made over $70 billion with a B dollars since the pandemic started. He can literally afford to pay everybody in the country $3,000 and still be richer than he was when the pandemic started. But yet his workers aren't getting hazard pay. They're not being taken care of, and it's disappointing. And to the point where, I try quote unquote not to shop at Amazon, but it is such like a cultural thing now where it's like, it's so easy, and that's the problem with things like that. It's these people that got rich fixing a problem that nobody knew they really had, which is waiting an extra day or two for something to arrive in the mail.
But they didn't get rich off of that. They got rich off of the people who did the work.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. So I worked in software for decades. And what I kept coming across was, here's the people that are producing the software. They came up with the idea. They did the coding. They made the final product. And then it sold really well. And then you folks decided, because your stock options needed a boost, you weren't giving anybody any sort of raise in a year. And I went to those folks and I begged and pleaded. I was like, look, 25 cents an hour. It is $1,000 across a year to give this guy a 25 cents an hour. You could tell everybody. And they were like, nobody's getting raises. And I'm like, look, you're telling me that the person that really made this happen, that added all this money to the bottom line, here's $50 million that they made for you. And you cannot give them 25 cents an hour, $1,000 a year to tell them. It's like, look, it's tough on the overall company. But we really appreciate, your contributions. They wouldn't do that. And I think that is one of the most criminal things. When they were cashing out $10 million a quarter in stock options, and some of them, $300-400 million a year.
Wow.
And they couldn't see their way to giving a freaking 25 cents an hour, $1,000 a year.
For one dude.
The employee who made $50 million for them.
And you remember working at that level, where that raise would mean everything to you.
Yes, yes.
Everything, just emotionally, but also financially.
Doing all that, I had to quit. It's the reason I had to leave software.
I remember that.
I couldn't stand it anymore.
Yeah.
Because I'm all, hey, if I could have billions, line me up.
Yeah, dude.
But I could see peeling off maybe this is why I will never have billions. It's because I'm like, look, you know, here's the people who are making this work happen, the people who are doing it. You know, it's one of the things, you know, I don't make a lot of money here at Heretic, but, you know, because when it comes down to it, I look at how can we pass those dollars down to the people who are actually doing the hard grunting work.
Yeah,
it's tough.
I agree, man. I mean, even on Ears Up, on my little Disney podcast, like my main thing was paying my co-hosts enough money to make it worth it. And for a long time, they were paid more than I wasn't even taking any money initially, because that meant a lot to me, because I grew up in small businesses. I've only worked for two large companies. One was Thrifty Ice Cream, and the other was Starbucks. Then it was More Beer, and then it was the Brewing Network. That was it. That's my job experience. So you sort of like come up in your formative years like that in these two small businesses, and you want to make sure that your people get paid, because it's hard to do as a small business, you know? And so it's tough. It's very tough.
I've got one question for you. Why have I not been on Ears Up? I love Disneyland and Disney World.
I don't know. What do you want to talk about? We'll talk about it. Let's talk about it.
I took my kids to Disneyland a minimum of two, usually four times a year. All the years they're
really
growing up.
Maybe we should,
we love Disneyland.
Maybe we should have you on our secret show where we drink and say cuss words.
Yes.
And that would be for our Patreon people. It really is, man. It's really great. But like, and actually speaking of Disney, when you're talking about stock options, like that's why the Disney folks got shit on real hard during this pandemic, is right before they did their first round of furloughs. So when the pandemic started, a lot of the upper management took salary cuts, which is, you know, admirable, because they wanted to make sure that everybody could, you know, survive. Like you're saying, like Disney does do a little bit more than I think the average company to make sure their employees are taken care of. And a lot of that has been forced upon them by the court of public opinion. But, you know, whatever, it is what it is. And then right before those layoffs kicked in, I think this may be the second round, right before they took back their full salaries. So like they went back to their pre-COVID salaries and then laid off 1,800 people. And it's like, this is why corporations and Disney have, and their stocks are almost at, I think, an all-time high right now.
Because they cut when they
have
people.
Right, well, they have one park open, and that's Disney World, which is in Florida, is seeing a giant spike in cases, but anyway, that's a whole other thing. That's all the other parks are closed. And so you can't tell me, number one, that the stock market means that people are doing well, because it's not what that means. But also, to take your money back and then fire people who make minimum wage, some of them live in cars and some of them have to have apartments with multiple people in it to survive, but you have a wine cellar. Like, I just don't really feel like that's anyway, I don't want to get too like into the social justice of the whole thing. But
there's nothing wrong with people making money. But I'll tell you this. I could increase our profits right now by firing a half a dozen people.
Do it. Let's call them right now. Let's get them on the line and let's tell them right now.
You know, but it's something I just can't do.
Yeah,
I'll let this place go into the shitter before I just like wholesale starting to cut people off. I mean, as long as we're doing okay and we can pay all the bills, then that's what I'm going to do.
Well, I appreciate that.
You know, we can't just, you know, and again, it's like cutting the heads off 300 people to line your pocket. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's why I can't stand that. That's why I couldn't stand working in that industry anymore.
Yeah, I'm
you
kind
can't
of
do that.
I'm kind of okay with seeing some of these big Silicon Valley folks leave the state. I'm kind of okay with it. Like Oracle's leaving. Bye. I don't know. I mean, you have a lot of those people raising the rent on other people. Like you're part of the wage inequality in California and the housing market boom.
They'll get replaced kind of by okay you know. There's people who want to live in California,
yeah,
and the people who can, you know, demand the higher pay rate and have the clever ideas. There's a reason why it all happened here, and right. while it continue to happen here, you know, a lot of these ideas aren't happening, you know, elsewhere.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Well, and you know, because you
I mean, you let people work remote, then you can get some great things.
Sure.
You know, people are smart everywhere. You know, people aren't just smart in California. They're smart across the country. They're smart across the world.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think the pandemic's going to help is the fact that people realize people can work remotely. And you have some brilliant people working remotely and doing amazing things.
Yeah.
And once that happens, I think there will be, you know, a whole energy that'll happen. That
I agree.
You know, may kick things forward.
So. I share the same thing. And then, you know, one last thing about you know, working remotely. My nephew works in the video game industry. Actually, he just worked on the Marvel Avengers video game that released a few months ago. And I was talking to him yesterday about getting credit because he wants to transfer out of art and into, like, you know, voiceover and more, like, more producer credits shit. And he's like, the one thing you do not get when you're doing art for video games is credit. You do not get it. It all goes to the producers and the EPs and the owners of the studio and all that kind of shit. But those low level people who create the levels and design the levels and do the art and do the texture and design how the flow goes and all that kind of shit, they generally systematically get shit upon. In the games industry, nobody really gives them accolades the way that you would an artist in basically any other industry. And it's very weird because there are a lot of people who do it. And a lot of that work is actually farmed out to contract workers. And it's just this weird, like, hierarchy. It's almost like a tiered system of, you know, if you're a contract worker, you're sort of nothing. You don't matter because you can be replaced. And then if you work for the studio, it's very different and sort of like goes up the ladder. But you would think, I mean, these games make $3 billion, but nobody really gets paid that much money unless you're a manager of something, unless you're a producer or whatever.
Somebody up the ladder does.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you have to get
title. I think with any...
It's crazy.
Any job, there's who you know, like that. Yeah. You know, your nephew is going to get to know somebody who's going to help him in his next opportunity, and then he's going to get to know some more people. So, like that, I honestly believe, even though things are remote, even though things are separated, and you know, people are compartmentalized, you still need to network and you need to know people to places.
For sure. But overall, you know, you would think that the people who make the thing that these companies are making billions on would and that's all these people want, is not all, but for the most part, everyone who wants credit for the job that they do.
Yeah, they want recognition.
If you want to be a good manager, tell your team they're doing a good job. And ask them how you can support them. That is 80% of being management. Go to your team. How can I help you? How can I help you? That will go very far in sort of solidifying your team with you. And anyway, but they don't get that. Here's a question from the chat, and then we're going to wrap things up because we're getting a little a little socialist. We're going to take off in a second, but Jonathan in the chat, Jamil, says, would a company like Heretic survive in a country like Belgium, given the different labor laws and tax regime? I know nothing about labor laws and tax regime of Belgium. I can't even really point to Belgium on a map, so I'm going to rely on you guys to help me out there.
Yeah, I think we would. We're in California, and... you know, one of the things in California is minimum wage has been going up a dollar an hour every year, which is a substantial increase. And, you know, there's rules on health care. We provide health care for our employees. We provide 401k. We provide, good wages. And I think, it might be easier in a place like Belgium where the acceptance is on, you know, providing those benefits to employees versus, you know, in the United States, there's a lot of resistance to that, where, you know, employees are, you know, a lot of employees struggle in certain situations. So, yeah, I think we do just fine.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Jonathan. I don't know. Jamil, thank you, man. I appreciate your time and your insights into not only business, but cocktail mixing. So at our next holiday party, I imagine I'm going to hire you to mix cocktails for me.
There you go. No. Well, thank you, brother.
Yeah, man.
It was fun seeing you and Teresa and hanging out for a while. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. It's very different because I see you at least weekly because I do all the video editing for Brew Strong. And so I see you like
that must be annoying. Constantly. That's why you don't like me anymore.
I don't like you anymore because you're a bad kisser. But it is annoying. It is frankly annoying because it's so much of you. Yes. But mainly it's because it's
you can't have too much of this.
It's mainly because it's too much of John Palmer. It's a lot of you, but it's too much Palmer. I mean, that guy has so many. He's over. He's so over opinionated, and he talks all the time just about himself, and it's so annoying. No, I'm kidding.
You've mixed us up.
That's right. Yeah, I do that, man. I'm sorry. In all honesty, new episodes of Brew Strong. I think a new one will drop. Well, a new one. It's probably recorded 4 years ago, but one will drop this week. So I'm going to edit this show, post it. I'm hoping by Wednesday, and then. I'll probably post another episode of Brew Strong on Friday.
We did like 50 episodes of Brew Strong and you're on episode 3?
Yeah, something like that. And I really wanted to write in and be like, bro, stop fucking working for a second. Because I'm like, I honestly got very stressed out. I had to write a whole plan because
we stopped.
You stopped and you're resting and that's good. But I think I'm like
rest until February or January and end of January.
I think I'm about 5 episodes, behind because we can't just push them all to the website because then everybody would just be inundated with content. We have to space it out.
Push.
That's right. But we have, we have Dr. Homebrews that are going up. We have this stupid show that's going up. We have Brew Strong that's going up. So we have to alternate and it's just, we're drip feeding what people really
pushes.
Want.
Yeah.
That's right.
You don't want one long push. You want, squeeze, relax, squeeze,
that's right.
Relax.
That's right. Anybody, any birthing mother will tell you that. I don't know, whatever. All right. Well, Teresa, thanks for joining us. I appreciate that as always.
Yeah.
And I'll probably see you next week. Yeah.
As always.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Jamil, and where can people go to find out where they can get your beers? I never really know the law on that. I always feel like it's a weird shifting.
I got no idea. We're in a number of states.
Email the website.
We're international. Okay. We're all over.
All right. Well, if you ever find a Heretic beer or cocktails, pick them up. Obviously, they're very good.
Ask for it.
I'm drinking
ask for it by name.
I'm drinking the lager, which, to be honest with you, I totally abused because I'm a freak and I left it in the garage for 4 days because I didn't want to get COVID and I ruined it, but it still tastes really good. So I wanted to tell you that. It's my fault, not yours.
There you go.
Yeah. I abuse your beer. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Hey, if you want to help out the Brewing Network, please support our sponsors. Anybody on the commercials that you've heard so far or the commercials after this, which, yes, we do have commercials after this, please support these people. Email these people. Let them know that you heard about us or heard about them through us and all that kind of fun stuff. It really helps to keep us on the air, especially during these trying times. Anybody who is sticking with us definitely deserves to be supported because times are tough. That's what we were just talking about. It's hard out there, especially right now. I'm glad things are looking up over the horizon there with the vaccine happening and finally starting today. People are starting to get inoculated, so that's good stuff. And hopefully our numbers will drop and things will be sort of semi back to normal and we can all hug and kiss again. But for now, support everybody, support yourselves. And support your local businesses in that order. I don't know what I'm doing. These cocktails got me going, man. All right, I'm gonna get out of here. Thanks a lot, everybody, for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you later.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity can.